Thank you for downloading Profile from the BBC. This week, one of Britain's more unusual politicians, now in his 70s, he's spent his career campaigning against poverty.
Where might you find the most surprising guest mix at a Westminster gathering? Try an event held in honour of a backbench MP called Frank.
The first speaker was Charles Clarke, obviously a huge beast in the Labour Party. The second speaker, perhaps an unlikely friend of Frank, was Andrew Neil, representing the media. They're both grammar school boys, they're both meritocrats, they both like to speak truth to power. Some people would say they both like the sound of their own voice a bit too much. But again, Andrew gave a rousing speech. And how can you top that? Well, how about a former Archbishop of Canterbury? George Carey, then, was the next speaker. And at that gathering...
Frank Field was the centre of attention at this 2009 event. Another of his friends, Daily Telegraph journalist Liam Halligan, was presiding.
And then halfway through proceedings, the room fell silent as Margaret Thatcher walked in to pay her respects to a Labour backbench MP. And that was one of her very last public appearances.
Frank Field defies all the usual rules. A Labour MP admired by many Tories, policy expert but ministerial failure, a formidable networker described by many as a loner, a politician who often sounds like a priest. Even those who've known him for decades, like Labour councillor Moira McLaughlin, still wonder how to place him.
There's a lot of different layers to Frank, and I'm not sure how many people actually get to the very bottom layer, the one closest to the centre.
Food banks are increasingly seeing people who don't wait 1 week or 4 weeks, but 8 weeks, 12 weeks, more than 12 weeks, for a benefit which is paid to make sure you can put food on the table is not acceptable.
What Frank Field cares about most was clear this week, with the launch of a report into hunger in the UK he'd co-chaired with the Bishop of Truro. It was full of practical suggestions, but for Field, the devout Anglican, there's an underlying moral message too, that the state can't solve the problem, that society's failed, that individuals must take more responsibility. How does Liam Halligan summarise the Field view?
It's a view that's about hard work, getting on, fairness, saving for a rainy day, these traditional values of meritocracy and decency. And you know, they're not particularly fashionable, they're certainly not trendy, but an awful lot of people in this country wish we'd return to them.
He was very, very close to his mother, of course.
Kate Hoey MP, one of Frank Field's closest friends in politics, knows how far his upbringing shaped his views. He was born in West London in 1942, his mother a classroom assistant and his father a labourer. Both voted Tory.
You know, he had an upbringing which believed in the family and in the idea that no one is sort of independent from what's going on around them.
Field was a member of the Young Conservatives before being expelled over his criticism of apartheid South Africa. After a grammar school education and university in Hull, he began to make his name from the late 1960s as director of the pressure group Child Poverty Action. Virginia Bottomley, later a Tory minister, was an early recruit.
He was always meticulous, fastidious, very tidy, hugely focused, always in a way a loner. So we were a sort of coalition of independent people.
Field also headed the Low Pay Unit. Groups like this were a novelty then, as was questioning the welfare state's success in solving social ills. Field swiftly mastered the tactics.
Frank understood that if you want to achieve change, you've got to achieve an alliance with all political parties and none. Brilliant with a soundbite. He talked about the sharp elbows of the middle classes. All sorts of expressions which are now in everyday use. But he could make poverty sexy. That's a hard thing to do.
He was also good at irritating politicians, embarrassing the mid-1970s Labour government over child benefit, for example. But then he decided to pursue his campaigns as a Labour MP. When the Birkenhead constituency on Merseyside became vacant, Field initially struggled to find it on a map.
Well, he was a southerner. I mean, that may not seem a big thing if you live down south, but Birkenhead is a very northern town.
Local Labour activist Moira McLaughlin.
Literally, physically, I mean, he got lost. There was a break in the selection proceedings and he went out for a walk around to have a look around the town. And it was February, I think it was, the meeting was being held in one of the back streets and he was asking people where this road was and people were saying, we've never heard of it, never heard of it. And he got lost and nearly didn't make it back in time for his own selection meeting.
He did find his way back, but had walked into a furious row which split the local party. Hard left group Militant Tendency, then very strong on Merseyside, loathed this southerner with conservative-sounding views. At one stage, Field was deselected, but he questioned the vote and said he'd stand as an independent if it wasn't rerun.
The Labour Party cannot survive as a potential alternative government if it's seen that Labour members of Parliament can be kicked out by the operation of a block vote, which no one can explain as how it was actually put together and the votes were cast. That's the first thing. And secondly,
I have said to Frank in the past, I don't know how he went through it. Meeting after meeting, he would just be abused and there was aggression towards him. There was name-calling that was just awful.
Do you think he ever felt like giving up under that pressure?
He wouldn't have been human, I'm sure, if he didn't feel like giving up, but he didn't ever show any sign of giving up. It was that feeling that he was there and he was going to work for Birkenhead. He wasn't going to bend to that kind of pressure. So he never spoke to me about ever wanting to give up.
Field won eventually, but felt the Labour leadership had failed to back him. As a backbencher, he's always been detached from the party machinery. The whips are said to have given up on him. Nor does he socialise around Westminster, often fond of just his own company, say his friends Virginia Bottomley and Kate Hoey.
He spends usually his Christmas Day on his own. He's never felt the need to have Christmas Day with lots of people.
I think he's essentially quite an isolated person who's got these friendships that go back many years. I mean, Peter and I have known him for over 40 years and we regard him as one of our closest friends. But he isn't the sort of person who pops round for a cup of coffee every day.
When not campaigning or in his constituency, what Field seems to like most is to retreat into his book-filled flat, listen to classical music and write another policy pamphlet. Or maybe, for a special treat, read about the 19th-century evangelicals or social reformers he most admires. Kate Hoey has seen the sanctum.
He sits in a very nice chair, which is backed up by a whole wall of books and the music centre. Very comfortable, very cosy. It's a very beautiful, quiet room. A perfect room for all the reading that he does so much of.
And all that energy? He demolishes bacon butties while talking policy, apparently, in a way Ed Miliband might envy. And then there's a rare indulgence for an otherwise ascetic man.
I think one of his ways of relaxing is eating chocolates. He's an absolute chocolate fanatic in that when we're all having supper, he'll bring perhaps a box of chocolates. And unlike most guests where they leave them, he will bring them to open them at the end of the meal.
One figure whose company Fields did seek regularly was Margaret Thatcher. He went partly to lobby for defence contracts to try and protect his constituents' shipbuilding jobs. But there was a broader meeting of minds, says Virginia Bottomley, a minister in the Thatcher government.
For example, he was always very hard on welfare cheats, so really campaigning against poverty, but didn't really condone welfare cheats. I think with my more kind of liberal background, I felt really sorry for all the very poor people I was working with and thought, well, you know, they've got to do what they can do to survive. But it's quite interesting, those are some issues where his views are much closer to Margaret Thatcher's instinctive views than they would have been to mine.
Field even visited Mrs. T, as he called her, in the dramatic night in 1990 when she faced resignation after failing to win a Tory leadership contest. This is what Field wrote later about their secret meeting. We got an actor to read it.
I went to Downing Street and was shown into the waiting room, despite protests from staff who told me the Prime Minister was too busy to see me. I'd taken some work with me and sat down making a few phone calls when in walked Norman Tebbit. Norman asked, "Why have you come?" "I've come to tell her that she is finished," I said. Norman told me I would see her shortly. A few minutes later, in came Mrs. T. I guided her to her chair and sat beside her. The energy, so evident the last time we met, had ebbed away. "Why have you come?" she asked. "I believe you are finished, Prime Minister." "It's so unfair." "I have not come to discuss fairness, Prime Minister. You cannot now go out on a top note, but you can go out on a high note. You must resign before you face the Commons again. Otherwise, those Tory creeps will tear you apart in public."
So what did the Labour leadership make of their maverick MP, so close to many of the party's enemies? Field was given one opportunity under Labour to put his views into practice when Tony Blair made him Minister for Welfare Reform in 1997 under Cabinet Minister Harriet Harman, so part, supposedly, of a team.
It was kind of taken on with him knowing that he was going to do it in a certain way.
Kate Hoey was Field's parliamentary private secretary.
He did see himself very much as working more to the Prime Minister than to perhaps
his boss,
who was in fact Harriet.
So he actually had hoped that he might have had her job?
Well, he should have had it.
And was that clear from the beginning that that was going to be difficult?
It wasn't about Harriet or the person. It was about the fact that he had a particular reason for doing that job. He wasn't doing it because he wanted to be a cabinet minister. He wanted to change things, and he found the whole way that everything was run very much as a machine, and I think he found that quite difficult because he knew what he was doing was right.
There were what diplomats would term full and frank discussions as the radicalism of Field's plans emerged and Chancellor Gordon Brown took against them. Lobby correspondent Kevin Maguire was watching.
There's a touching naivety about Frank Field, and we saw that when he did take that job, and he was naive because with Gordon Brown in the Treasury, you weren't going to get anything past him unless he agreed, and it went wrong very quickly, and he found Tony Blair wasn't backing him in his rows with Gordon Brown and Harriet Harman, and when he walked out of the government in 1998, Alistair Campbell, the then spin doctor, briefed very heavily it was because Frank Field was insisting he had to be in the cabinet rather than the Minister of State and visiting the cabinet. And he said it was all about personal ambition and that Frank Field had thrown his toys out of the pram because he hadn't got what he wanted. But it was always going to end in tears.
See, I'm conventional and I'm a team player and I like to work with a team. But Frank is a loner and he's a very cerebral loner. So the combination of his role with Harriet Harman's was never going to work.
Virginia Bottomley. Frank Field's banishment was symbolised by Tony Blair and Gordon Brown walking out of the Commons chamber as Field made his resignation statement.
If the last 15 months have taught me anything, it is that the biggest of all reforms requires not only an executive position for a person with convictions about welfare reform, but also the whole of the cabinet and especially the Chancellor to share beliefs about that common endeavour.
There's always been an air of the martyr about him. He jokes that he's a member of two ailing institutions, the Labour Party and, another Field passion, the Church of England.
Frank Field doesn't so much walk as glide. He doesn't make much noise. He'll smile at you if you smile at him. He's always polite. But if you look at him, you hear a lot of his colleagues call him Funeral Frank, call him a coffin dodger, because he's very distinguished, but he also looks very worn, as if the burden of the world has got too much for him.
Kevin Maguire of the Daily Mirror. Field's expressed views in recent years on issues like immigration, Europe and Englishness that critics see as hard line, admirers see as prophetic. But all agree on the consistency with which he's campaigned on poverty since the 1960s, on show again in this week's report on hunger in the UK. He just doesn't give up, says constituency colleague Moira McLaughlin.
I've only known one MP in Birkenhead. I can't actually contemplate a successor to Frank, which is just as well since he says he's going to keep going on until he drops off the edge.
For now, the Frank Field one-man campaign force, fuelled by chocolate and moral passion, shows no sign of losing faith.
Profile was presented by Chris Bowlby and produced by Tim Mansell. You can hear more programmes like this one on the BBC website.